Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th. And it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Hi, this is The Rock Podcast, and I'm Denny Somach. I'm a rock historian, producer, and best-selling author. And this is the number one podcast for classic rock. We're in our fourth season. Before we begin, I want to remind you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, or if you prefer the audio-only version, it's on all podcast platforms. It's free, no charge, and you'll be notified when a new episode is released and have access to previous released episodes you may have missed. On this episode, you'll hear from Steve Hackett, an English guitarist, songwriter, and producer. We first heard of him from his years with Genesis, from 1971 to 1977. He released his first solo album while still a member of Genesis in 1975, and to date has released 30 solo albums. His latest, The Circus and the Night Wheel, came out in February of 2014, and he's been on tour with Genesis Revisited, Foxtrot at 50. We talked about how he was one of the first to introduce guitar tapping well before Van Halen and much more. Hackett was inducted along with the other members of Genesis into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2010. So here is Steve Hackett in conversation. I know you will enjoy it.
Thank you for joining us.
Pleasure. Here we go.
So, The Circus and the Night Wheel, your 30th album? 30th?
Yes, sir.
How could
that be? Well, there have been a lot of albums. It's the 30th studio album. I've been involved with a lot more albums than that, either with other people or when I was with Genesis or GTR. And there's been a ton of live albums. So I don't know if you count all those. I've lost count. So there's been tons of stuff, but that's been the full output in terms of studio stuff, solo stuff, so-called solo stuff.
Well, I like the way you put those inserts in the beginning of the album.
Right.
Sounds great.
It's interesting that it's kind of a soundscape at the beginning to describe what being born in 1950 was like. That was the idea.
And you were born and you lived near Battersea Station?
That's right. Battersea Power Station. We were opposite that. Which Pink Floyd used many years later with the Flying Pig, but that was View. It was the largest building in Europe at the time.
Really?
And it powered half of London, but it was also a great polluter. So hence the smoke, which was also a nickname for London. People of the smoke, people of London, in other words. It was coal-fired. It was extraordinary London post-war recovering, and growing up with rationing as we did. Much of the area that I grew up in was destroyed, and many of those back streets were fantastic Georgian houses, but they had these big pillars that were leaning this way and that way, and it looked like a giant that just stomped through the whole thing. So for much of the 1950s, it took much longer. I think it must have taken 20 years, in fact, for it to start to look like its more wealthy cousin, which was Belgravia, bordering that. But now the houses look the same. So Belgravia and Pimlico have a very similar look, and they're similarly expensive.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about this album. How long did it take you to do?
Well, I started it 2 years before it was released. I did two tracks, and then we had so much touring, I wasn't able to address it for ages and ages and ages. So it was two main chunks, really, and the rest of it was done in one go. As I say, it was over a 2 year period, so I can't tell you exactly in terms of man hours, but it was rather quicker than other things have been. I didn't have leisure time at my disposal.
What were the two tracks that you recorded a couple of years ago?
Don't tell me you don't remember,
because I know you do.
No, I do. One of them was Get Me Out, and the other one was Wherever You Are. They happen a little bit later in the album, as it happens, but we wanted to do something which was chronological to allow the autobiographical thread to go through. So much of it was a commission or a self-commission in order, as I say, to paint the picture and to do the occasional video that accompanied that early stuff. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I love the album.
Thank you.
I think it's your most accessible album to date.
It's funny that it went to the top of the rock and metal charts in the UK, and it seems to have made a dent on the German charts as well. So that's good. It's been my first number one, and so I'm very pleased that it's been so well received. And live with shows, we kick off with three tracks straight off from the new album. But it already feels like an old friend, if you know what I mean, because of the nature of the way it sets up with chunks of old music and newscast and, as I say, soundscape, which sets the scene for how life was way back then.
Did you have a single on it?
Did you say a single?
Yeah.
They released, I'm trying to think, Wherever You Are was released as a single. I think the first track was released as a single. But I always see singles as advertisements for an album. I wasn't expecting to have a hit single from it. But as people are discovering the album, there is a vague chance that there could be a hit single from it. But I think that, you know, I think one has to be realistic. If you are an album's act, that is what you do. People expect albums from me. So I don't think necessarily people want the four minute thing. You know, that's not my, that's not me. I'd be very happy to have a single. Thank you very much. Yeah. That would be, you know, a hit single. But I think the last time I had a hit single was with GTR, and that was When the Heart Rules the Mind with Steve Howe. We had something in the mid 80s, so it's been a long time since hit singles. Although there's been the odd other skirmish with Genesis things, with things that perhaps weren't a hit in their day, but by the time we did a re-record of stuff like Carpet Crawl, you know, that was on an album of platinum sort of success. So that, a success and failure, I think. Was it Rudyard Kipling who had something to say about that? I think about the two imposters, success and failure. So I just consider success to be to keep going, to keep doing it. And I love coming to the end of an album, the completion of it, and the completion of a tour. We are mid-tour, and that is going extremely well, particularly in the South, which I have not played for decades. So it's great that the South has taken off for us so far. We did Dallas, Austin, and we've just arrived in Stafford, which is associated, obviously, with Houston. So that's going very well.
Did they extend the tour? Was the tour extended?
Yeah, we end up in Mexico, in Guadalajara and Mexico City, as all, you know, part of it. Interesting that it's going to end up there, then back to the UK and various other things. It's a busy year for touring in Europe. many places. There will be, I think there's going to be Japan, there's going to be Dubai. I've never played that before. That's interesting. So Europe, UK, Royal Albert Hall show. I'm looking forward to that because that's the kind of, I think it's the best gig we have in the UK, actually. You know, there are other places that are larger, but none more famous than the Royal Albert Hall. So, you know, for me, it's a homecoming. And I know my mother's, who's still alive, she's 94, is looking forward to coming to that show. She's a headbanger, my mother.
Okay. So this is basically a concept album, right?
Yeah, it's a narrative. I didn't use the word concept, but publicists are always keen on using those terms. It's a story, it's narrative, it's autobiographical. So yes, of course, it's conceptual, but if a few years ago, if you said, I've done a concept album, they'd say, oh, concept albums went out with the Moody Blues. We don't do that.
I'm just going to say that. They went out with them.
Well, there you go. You see, this is the thing. So I think probably doing some things that are deliberately unfashionable has put me right there in the center again, in the mainstream. It was designed to be an almost continuous running piece of music. There are some natural pauses, but in the main, I wanted to do that feeling of a journey, to not disappoint people that loved an aspect of Genesis, right, which was personified, typified by Supper's Ready, the 23-minute piece. So I'm very happy with that. You know, I loved it when the Beatles started doing that sort of thing in the mid-60s, 1967, suddenly. Music as continuum,
right,
as journey, certainly conceptual. But I think, you know, it's a loose concept. I think that stories actually can give you more freedom. Something my wife, Jo, often says, and she's been heavily involved with the creation of this piece and the naming of it and the album cover and various things. So it's something we do together. We've got a band of, well, there are people, lots of people on the album, but the creative team is really myself, Joe, my wife, and Roger King.
Okay,
so three put it together.
So you're on the Foxtrot at 50 tour, right?
That's right. Yes. Yeah. But the first half is solo stuff. First half of the show is me, then 20-minute break, then we do the whole of Foxtrot,
right,
from 1972. So that's Foxtrot. It was at 50, now it's more like at 52. That's not my years, it was the year the album was done, 1972. Long time ago when John Lennon started getting interested in the band and
right,
said nice things about us around about that time and setting England when we first started touring America. He was saying very nice things about us, calling us sons of the Beatles. we were getting great reviews from him at the time, but there was no social media, so nobody found out about that,
right,
until 50 years later, and interviews emerge, bits of tape with him saying that. And of course, we grew up as Beatle fans, and wonderful that we had his ear for 5 minutes. Great. Fantastic.
How did the Beatles influence you?
The Beatles gave everyone license to print their own songs, to write their own ideas. I think that the important thing is that the Beatles, besides the look and the slightly long hair and all of that, and all the cheeky chappy stuff, I think that the important thing was that Tin Pan Alley had been sidelined in favor of these guys write their own stuff. So they came along with a level of autonomy that other acts did not possess.
So Foxtrot was Genesis' first UK top 20 album, is that correct?
You know, I can't remember what it did in the UK. It may have done that. It certainly went to number one in Italy. I cannot remember what it did in the UK. I think it may have gone to number three. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that.
I know a lot of fans, and I think the guy that wrote the book Mondragão. Why are you so big in Italy?
I think it was an alternative form of Catholicism that related to mythology, the historical thing. Also, I think, you know, the sanction of a band that arrives in the very first album they do, you know, some years before I joined them, was called From Genesis to Revelation. So I suspect that all the Latin countries,
right,
which are so religious, saw something in that and assumed that we were perhaps Christian rockers. And there was that also, you know, the Greco-Roman aspect was addressed very much in the early songs of the band. Lots of stories about hermaphrodites and Father Tiresias, references. So I think it's probably because the cloistered life that the band led when it was initially formed meant that experience was found more in books, perhaps, than in life. So
okay,
you could say the virgin soldiers who were locked up for their own good could not, with their hand on their heart, talk about their experiences with women, but their experiences in libraries, perhaps. And it was a criticism that was often aimed at Genesis. It looked like all their experiences had been looked up third hand, etc. But it gave the band a kind of, maybe the literary sense, and made some of those early lyrics very poetic, less based on the mating ritual, but nonetheless, weird and wonderful stories, part and parcel of what we now retrospectively call prog, that I think like to think of it as inclusive music. Over time,
right,
it managed to include so many genres, pan-genre, lots of styles, and I still carry the flag for that, the idea that music should be full of surprises. And I've tried to do that with the latest effort, as well as, you know, where we came from. And,
yeah.
People, you know, the reason people like that.
Okay. So in the first half of your show, you're doing Steve Hackett's greatest hits. What are some of the songs you're doing?
The stuff I do, as I said, there's three from the new album. First track is People of the Smoke. Right. Second track is Circo Inferno, again from Circus and the Night Whale. The third track is These Passing Clouds, which is rather more melodic and not quite so full on, but it gives a chance for the band to show their paces. Rob Townsend to work his magic on All Things Blown, as well as to interact with him with guitar and do something that's instrumental. Then we get into something called The Devil's Cathedral, which was off of Surrender of Silence. Again, another story, really in a Genesis style again. Closest relation might be Dancing with the Moon at Night, off of Sewing in by the Pound. Right. But it's also an instrumental workout, as well as something where Nad Silver, the vocalist, can show his chops as well. It's the idea of, you know, if life's an opera, bring it on. That feeling that he does so very well. And then we get into older stuff, which is Every Day, the only drug song I ever wrote from the late 70s. And then even earlier, A Tower Struck Down, when I was doing an album based on tarot cards, the very first thing I ever did was a conceptual album based on that. And then we go rather more sort of, let's kind of mix it up more with Camino Royale, based on New Orleans and my experiences, both literal and the sort of dreamscape aspect again. So it's kind of jazz rock. I think that's its nearest relation. One day I'll try recording it with an orchestra as well and see if I can keep up with the changes, because it's hugely syncopated. I don't know about you, but a lot of what I came to be schooled by and with was the influence of big band work upon rock, but accent-driven stuff that came in with a push, unlikely arrivals of big chords in the middle of things, and it's what defined, I think, our work, and also early Yes, I like to think. So there's that. Then we're right back to 1975 again. With the last thing we do is a kind of slow crescendo, which is A Shadow of the Hierophant, the end of that, it just gets louder. Starts with a little tinkle and gets louder and louder and louder and louder. The building shakes, and audiences seem to absolutely love that. So I think progressive audiences like the fact that there's a classical aspect to it, there's a rock aspect to it. It shakes the foundations and gives heavy metal a run for its money, but driven from the ground up, perhaps.
Okay. So I remember first time I saw Genesis was probably 73. And for the show was starting off with Watcher of the Skies.
Yes.
And I was blown away. Obviously.
Interesting. Yeah. My band do a great version of Watcher of the Skies. I think it's probably more powerful than ever because, you know, we didn't have bass bins back then.
Right.
We didn't have the level of compression that we have now, all the digital reverbs and repeats and all of that. So it is a massive version of that tune. And all of Foxtrot, I like to think, doesn't have a weak track on it, if I may say so. That's
right. No, the you're golden right. period
for me. The golden period is Foxtrot and Selling England by the Pound. So I think, you know, that's the golden period. And I think of it as the Lennon approved period, the John Lennon approved period. The next period to take note of is obviously when Peter Gabriel leaves and we become a four-piece, and right. we did I did a couple of albums with the band at that point. But then and once I left to pursue solo stuff, because I didn't have the autonomy
right
then, I was told that either I knuckled under and just became another member of the band, did as I was told. Or, and I think I made the right choice, which was to go off and do musical experiments for the next how many years. And I got to work with wonderful people, the guys from Kansas, the band, Richie Havens, Randy Crawford. So the adventure started there. You know, world music sort of was taking a hold of me then. And I knew that I had to travel to do many of the things that were going to not just influence me, but also, you know, create a number of bands and record in a number of locales with people from all over the globe. It really started then, and that still continues now. So, you know, I love working with people and instruments all around the globe, and serving it up. Sometimes as rock, other times it blurs into other genres.
Okay.
Classical, flamenco, jazz, etc. You name it. Working with Indian musicians, with Peruvian instruments, with stuff from Armenia, from Tajikistan, from Azerbaijan. Working with people at times who can't get visas because they might be considered a little bit too far Middle East. But I just think that music is a great ambassador for peace.
Do you remember?
I could wave a magic wand. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Do you remember your first dates in America?
Yes, I do. I remember playing at the Lincoln Center, which was kind of extraordinary. First dates in New York. It was kind of extraordinary. Yes, it was a WNEW benefit.
Right. Christmas concert. Yeah.
That's right, early stuff. And it was just wonderful to be in America for the first time, even though we, half of us had flu and didn't know what the hell jet lag was and all the rest. But it was the Big Apple. It was the big picture.
So let me ask you, have you seen the YouTube clip with you playing Firth of Fifth?
I've seen many recent ones.
This is a recent
one. Is it a recent one? Yes, I have. I have seen many, many of those. Yes, sure. Yeah, it's better now than it was. Yeah, it's better now than it was because my band does the full length version of that. These guys are virtuosos. They're the best I could find. So, I love playing the classic music with the benefit of it's had a long time to bed in for them, but it's still a favorite track, and it's. It's a wonderful melody. It is inspiring. I'm glad you like it still.
Yeah. Now, a couple of questions I absolutely must get in.
Sure.
Let's get into the tapping thing. You did it way before Eddie Van Halen, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's credited me with that, and Brian May and various people. And I didn't get to meet Eddie, but he said some very nice things about me, and he was obviously a fabulous guitarist. So it's just adding to the glossary of terms, isn't it? You know, the dictionary expands when someone does something like that. So it's a technique which has allowed you to play extremely fast.
And,
but melody is important, of course.
So tell me about when you were inducted into the Hall of Fame. That's 2010, I believe. What was that like?
Yeah, that was a wonderful evening. It started off a very stiff and starchy, very formal affair. Mm-hmm. And as the evening wore on and more people got up and played and spoke, you were watching so much of your own history in terms of not just what had happened in your own lifetime, such as my professional life, such as ABBA and the arrival of that. They were being inducted the same night. Yeah. But also people were being celebrated posthumously, people who'd written songs that you'd listened to when you were 13. And that was wonderful. Jimmy Cliff got up, did stuff. That was wonderful. Eric Burdon of the Animals was up doing stuff, and that was brilliant. I think the Genesis probably would have performed, but Phil was not well even at that point. And his troubles in that part in that area are very well known. But it was a fascinating evening with speeches and various things. So I think it started out as one thing and turned into another. I could see that Phil wanted desperately to get up on that stage and start doing something. The whole place was dancing. It was an amazing evening. And it's an amazing institution that America did first, of course.
Now, if you had played, what songs would you have played? Do you know?
Well,
you must have talked about this.
It's funny because the band Fish did a version of Watch of the Skies.
Really? It was
the thing that kicked off the entire evening. I would have liked to have done that, certainly. That would have been nice.
Yeah, that would have been spectacular. So tell me a little bit, do you know what your next album is going to be? Or?
Oh, I don't know yet. I'm still doing lots of gigs. We're talking about things, kicking over an idea for an album at the moment, my wife and I. But, you know, we'll get to it as soon as we can.
Okay.
Still touring, you see. Big touring. Yeah, yep.
Have you seen any of these Genesis tribute bands?
Yes, I have, yes.
Musical Box? Yeah, what do you think?
Yes. Well, I think they do it very well. I think that all tribute bands, it's great that they reproduce exactly what we did with exactly the same equipment, etc. What you don't get with the tribute bands is to allow something to evolve as we did as a band when we were doing it back in the day. So obviously it becomes celebrated but fossilized, whereas I like to think that when we reinterpret things, we change things around, change the instrumentation, retain the spirit of it, but, you know, to be a little bit flexible with things and update things and use equipment that, frankly, is more reliable than old Mellotrons.
Okay. Let me ask you, what do you listen to, particularly guitar players?
I like Joe Bonamassa a lot. I like him very much. In the old days, I used to listen, and still do, to Andres Segovia. Still think he hasn't been equaled as a classical guitarist. Somewhere between Hendrix and Segovia, I'm somewhere between the two of them. I love Nylon. I do that as well. I've got a respect for rock and baroque.
Okay, so what city are you in today?
I'm in Stafford, so just arrived, literally, and we're near Houston. Yeah, that's us. Just came from Austin, and that was brilliant. wonderful to be doing itself.
Amazing music city.
Awesome. Yes, absolutely. Yes, wonderful. Yeah.
So, fantastic. How is this tour up to your expectations, or is it exceeding it? Or?
Oh, it's been great to break new territories for me. As I say, I haven't done the South for decades because we were afraid that the home of country would not necessarily respond to this, virtuosic driven stuff, which has, so many influences. So I imagined all that sort of, either the down-home stuff, what have you. But we did Chicago again, and we'd done it at the end of last year, but we did it again, and that was brilliant. So the home of blues seemed to embrace us, and the home of country has embraced us. Last year at the end, we did Ryman's, which had been the Grand Ole Opry. Somehow, the place has come alive. It's been fantastic. I can't complain. It's been
so
wonderful.
What countries do you have a big following in, other than Italy?
What countries? Well, it's all over the world, and it's growing. I think, because I've been doing this for a very long time, people have, eventually caught up with what I do, and the fact that perhaps I'm the nearest thing to Genesis, but I tour massively more than Genesis perhaps ever did.
Okay. Well, I want to wish you a lot of luck with this album. I really do.
Thank you so much.
And I love the sound effects. Thank you.
Oh, great. Good. Yeah. I'm pleased with that. Thank you so much, Danny. Thank you.
I very creative. I saw the video too, and it was kind of neat.
Oh, good.
So
I'm glad you liked it.
Anyway, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Good luck on the rest of this tour. And
thank you so much.
We'll look forward to the next album.
Thank you, Danny. All the best to you. Thank you.
Okay,
nice
Steve.
To talk.
Nice
Thank
to
you.
Talk.
All the best. Thank you.
That's it for this edition of The Rock Podcast. If you're listening to the audio-only version, I want you to know we have a video version on YouTube, and it's all free, no charge. As always, thanks for joining us and helping us become the number one podcast for classic rock. Find us at our website, therockpodcast.com, and send your comments, questions, and suggestions to me at hello@therockpodcast.com. That's hello@therockpodcast.com. I'm Denny Somach, and that's it for this episode. Thanks.